Hello. Hi, everybody. You are listening to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FMLP in Uptown Vashon, Washington. And this is Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host today, this beautiful spring day. And with me in the studio is my cohort in crime, Truman O'Brien.
Hello. Good
Hi,
afternoon.
Hi, Truman. Truman does our engineering for us, and without him, we could not be here because I can't do it. And occasionally, we love to have Truman's color commentary because we never know what's going to come out of that mouth. So he's here. And then we have a really special guest today that I'm excited to get to know a little better. This is Emily Scott, who's the executive director of the Vashon Mori Food Bank.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Hi, welcome, Emily.
Thank you for having
me. I'm glad you're here. Yeah. I think you came a few years ago.
I did.
2 or 3 years ago.
Yep. Yeah.
I think you've been here twice before.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is a whole new ball game.
It is.
It's a whole new ball game.
We've been busy.
Yeah. You really have. So we have lots to talk about today. I think we'll just jump right in.
Yeah, let's go
so,
for it.
Emily's been with the food bank for quite a while, 13 mm-hmm. years, I think
yeah,
you said.
About, mm-hmm.
But somewhere in there with a little break in between for some educational opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just start at the beginning. So where were you born and what's your childhood like?
Sure. Let's see. I was actually born in Tacoma.
Okay.
Yeah, in kind of the north end. In the birthing center across the street from St. Joe's Hospital.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. Born there. My family lived there for the first 6 years of my life. And then mm-hmm. we moved to Indiana for my
oh,
dad's
my goodness.
Work. Yeah.
Okay.
So I grew up in the Midwest. A small town of about 10,000 people in northern Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, surrounded by corn and cows and...
and flatland.
Yeah, 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 and trucks and stuff.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Went to high school in Plymouth, Indiana. Played a lot of soccer. I was in marching band.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, first chair euphonium player.
The euphonium?
Band. Yeah.
My mm-hmm. goodness.
Yeah, so in another life...
You still play?
I still have my euphonium, and every once in a while I'll get out and like, you know, play a B flat scale at Thanksgiving
fun.
Or something.
Yeah,
but
how fun.
It's actually quite, I've lost my chops, you know, like you gotta keep your aperture up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's see. After I graduated from high school, I moved out to Oregon to go to college at U of O in
mm-hmm,
Eugene.
Mm-hmm. What a great place.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fun, yeah, it's mm-hmm. a fun school for sure.
All those hippies.
Lots of Vashon Eugene connections,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, gosh, then what? I left college, moved to Portland for a couple years and did the, you know, 20-something Portland
mm-hmm,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I joined the Peace Corps and moved to West Africa for about 27 months.
So how old were you when you were in the Peace Corps?
That's a good question.
Middle 20s, maybe?
Was, yeah, I must have been like 23 to 26.
And what did you do with the Peace Corps?
Yeah, I was what they call an urban agriculture extension agent. So
okay.
I was working with some kind of like government ag offices to mm-hmm. basically put on... like micro gardening trainings for
oh.
women's groups and like community groups.
Uh-huh.
Which is funny. I mean, I had, you know, it's a pretty like formative experience, mm-hmm. but you go, you know, to a different country and learn all these skills and then you're supposed to like teach other people how to do it, but in a different language.
Mm-hmm.
So really you sound like a third grader, you know, being like, put the seed
in
the thing.
The
and all these women yeah. are just like laughing at you and
yeah.
telling you have a big butt and stuff. So. Which is fine, you know. But then getting out of the Peace Corps, it was really kind of like, again, a great experience, but really reinforcing that my skill set and like language,
mm-hmm.
Like I could be a lot more effective doing this kind of work in, you know, in the States than overseas.
Because
it, you know, you're there for just about 2 years and you spend the first 3/4 of it trying to figure out how to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So then you've got
mm-hmm.
this... sweet 6 months right at the very end where you're like, okay,
I can
actually
do this.
Talk to people and
yeah.
then you go home.
And then it's time to go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But what an experience
yeah.
for
yeah.
a young person to see such a different culture,
yeah.
different food, different terrain,
yeah.
different everything.
Mm-hmm. Talk yeah. about the food. The food culture in West Africa is really, really prominent.
Yeah,
so.
I bet. So
yeah.
I bet you learned a lot about cooking African.
You know, yeah, I it's kind of interesting. I don't know if I did that much traditional cooking when I was over there because... they place Peace Corps volunteers with a household. So you live in kind of a compound.
Right.
And there's always like the matriarch of the family who, you know, does the majority of the cooking with the, like I had three sisters, like host sisters. So they really didn't let me do much cooking.
Well, it's their territory.
Exactly.
It's their domain. Yeah.
Exactly.
I kind of understand that about people in their kitchens, you know, it's kind of like sometimes you can help chop the onions or something, but
it's a very personal space.
It is.
Yeah.
It can be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. So do you have siblings?
I do. I have one sister named Jessie. She lives up in Bellingham.
Okay. So she's close by.
Yep. Yeah. And my mom's in Tacoma still. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it just, you know, after I got out of the Peace Corps, I moved here to Vashon. Because, you know, the transition out of the Peace Corps can be just kind of as disorienting.
Kind of shocking, really. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like getting back into the rhythm of things. So I moved out here to work at Pacific Crest Farm.
Okay.
Shout out to Jen Parker and
hey,
her
Jen.
Husband Bob. So I spent about a year just working kind of like as a farmhand out there. And then shortly after that farm season got done, I got a job at the Vashon Food Bank as the
Could I ask a question?
Yeah.
Two questions. First, what language do they speak in?
I spoke, so it's a French colonial, or, you know, a former French colony. So in college, I took a little bit of French, but really leaned on learning Wolof while I was over there. There's all these different kind of regional languages, and you just get way more like street cred if you're, if you're like, you know, a white person in the majority, like not white country, and you show up speaking the language of the colonizer, it's, you know,
yeah,
it's just a better look, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The other question is, you know, there are a number of Peace Corps, Peace Corps folks on the island.
Yeah.
Have
met a handful of Peace Corps folks. Really interestingly, you know, Rob, who has owned a Plum Forest Farm for years. I'm forgetting his last name right now.
I can't remember.
Anyway, it turns out Rob, back in the 80s, I believe, worked in like international development, and he lived about two blocks away from where I lived in Chess in West African city.
Wow.
I know. Wow. What are the chances?
Small world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you have, your trajectory has been pretty straight line with regard to what it is you're doing. And I'm wondering, what did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
That's a good question. I don't know why this sticks out in my mind, but I remember having a conversation with my dad. I used to be very much in the like environmentalist, you know,
even
like,
as a kid.
Yeah. Which really was like the influence of my parents. But I can remember having a conversation with my dad about how trees and like plants were just easier to manage because humans are just too complicated. Like I just was like, I just cannot. And now the work that I, you know, it obviously I kind of missed the mark on that one.
Right. Well, not really, but
yeah, because it turns out humans are complicated, but they're also like those relationships are what, you know, like kind of make the world go round.
Well, and see, to me, plants are complicated.
Yeah.
I am not a gardener and I make no bones about that. I don't even pretend anymore. I used to say, oh, well, I have a few pots, but no, I'm just really not. And I love it. I wish I had it, but I don't have it.
My partner, Brendan, is the same way. He's like, I don't want to be responsible for that, you know, in addition to a kid and a dog. And it's like, plants.
Yeah, plants. Yeah, I'm kind of that way too.
I get it.
So when you're on the island and you have time to explore and kind of be here and you're not working
and not just be like the food bank lady.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you do? What do you like to do when you're here?
Oh, I'm a big bike rider. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy a good paddleboard and I'm kind of like a water.
Are you a water dog?
I'm a water baby. I actually just with some good friends of mine who run Aggies, the farm.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I love Aggies.
We went swimming over on Colvos Passage on Saturday morning. Yeah. It was chilly, invigorating, let's say.
Well, you know, one of our co-hosts and engineers, Heidi Skrypek, is a swimmer, and she's out there almost
she's a hardcore swimmer.
Yeah.
I'm more of a floater, you know, just kind of a bobber
and kind of fair weather a little bit.
Yeah.
So are you a hiker?
Yeah. I definitely like hiking. Just kind of, you know, get like outdoor stuff. Really, cycling is my kind of my sweet spot. I've ridden, you know, just a regular bicycle for years, and just a couple years ago got an e-bike and felt like I was like cheating on my regular bicycle.
Yeah, yeah.
But really coming and going from Vashon, you know, there's a lot of hills out here. Mm-hmm. So it's more sustainable to have a little electric
so
assist.
Are you still living over town or did you move here?
I was here on island for over 10 years.
I know you
and
were.
Just 2 or 3 years ago moved up to Greenwood in North Seattle. So I do the reverse commute these days, which is not as bad as the, you know, like I hear at least it's not as bad as coming
the
like
other way,
working in the city.
I would imagine that makes sense.
Yeah. And you know, for whatever reason, I don't know how, I kind of like, it's probably some kind of Pavlovian response or something, but I find I get the best work done, whether it's writing or like, I don't know, Excel work or something on the bus or on the ferry. I think it maybe was a, you know, result of being in grad school, but I can, those like 20 to 30 minute stints where you just focus and
you know, I remember that because when I lived in Portland and I worked in the corporate world, parking was unbelievably expensive and it wasn't covered. And so I thought, well, I guess I got to ride the bus. And it was like, oh, I don't want to ride the bus. You know, it was like just demeaning and it's slow and it's these terrible things. And then I started riding the bus and it was such a gift.
I love the bus.
It was just fabulous. Yeah. And I got work done on the bus. Yep. And if I didn't have work, I could read or
and
just
there's
stare
always
up.
Something interesting going
there's
on. On the bus.
Somebody interesting to watch. Yeah. Yes, there is. That's a good way to put it. But I'm a big fan of mass transportation because it's, once you get used to it, you know, it's a little different when you're used to driving yourself everywhere.
Yeah.
But I'm one of the ones who looks at all the cars on the ferry with one person.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And you just think, wow.
It's a lot. And it's expensive.
It's
you know?
Very expensive. Mm-hmm. It's all very expensive.
That
midday
water taxi, though. Kudos,
what
Teresa Mosqueda, Emily Alvarado.
Yes.
Yeah, the elected officials who made that happen. I love
what
that.
What a gift. Mm-hmm. And I hope it continues forever.
Yeah.
I don't
too.
Know if it will. I don't know what stage we're at with that, but.
Yeah, well, they did just expand a Sunday service.
I know.
Which is
I read
exciting.
That. Yeah. Which is really great. Mm-hmm. And I like it that you can go during normal hours and still come home at a normal hour.
You can go have a day.
Yeah.
You, know?
You can go for the day and or the half a day.
Yeah.
It's, I think it's great. So given your you know, love of plants and growing and farmers and dirt and all of that, do you have another hobby that you do or is it all relative to?
That's a good question. At various stages in my life when I've had, you know, like a yard, I was a pretty avid gardener for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The past few years with the pandemic and the, you know, the food bank, like my professional life has taken up a lot more space. So I honestly, I've become a really lazy, like backyard, you know, kind of, container gardener.
I like that. Though.
But I still, I still, you know, have a house full of plants and just enjoy fiddling around.
What are you reading now that's interesting or watching? What's going on in your intellectual world?
That is a really good question. I actually was just admitting to someone the other day with the way, you know, the world has been recently. Mm-hmm. I probably haven't finished an entire book in like 3 years or
Isn't
something.
That something?
Yeah.
I talk to so many people who are in the same boat and I used to read a couple books
me
a
too.
Week.
Yeah, yeah.
Or three maybe,
I
depending.
Was that kid in high school who would like walk around with a book in the hallway
me
and now,
too.
You know, my attention span is just...
Well, it's fragmented. We're very fragmented right now.
That was actually a commitment. So because, you know, we just had, which I'm sure we'll talk about more, but we just had our big annual fundraising gala
we will
on Friday.
Talk about it. Yeah.
So I'm happy to say I'm taking off Thursday through Thursday. I'm actually taking a whole week off.
A whole week.
And I'm not going to do anything.
You're really taking it off.
I'm just not going to
I'm unplugging.
I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, that's
I'm
good.
I'm just going to sit in my living room. And I told myself I would finish a book. I'm going to try to read a book.
You
and
know,
that's all.
Yeah. the thing with the books is my tastes have changed.
Yeah.
And the authors that I used to just love and could devour don't get that to me anymore. It doesn't do it anymore.
Yep.
And so now I'm sort of exploring with some new avenues. Like, I think what I want to do now are biographies.
Yeah.
And see a little more personal, in-depth, mm-hmm. almost journalism
yeah.
in a biographical sense. Or maybe yeah. autobiographies. I don't know. But I used to be an avid fiction reader.
Mm-hmm.
Everything fiction or essay.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's sort of like ho-hum.
Mm-hmm.
Or I have to read the same page 8 times.
Right. yeah.
To remember where I was, you know. So
yeah.
you're not alone in that regard. And I'm finding it very hard to admit that.
Yeah, I was going to say it, but I'm a little bit, you know, not proud of myself. But luckily, I think reading is probably like, you know, riding a horse or a bicycle
well,
or whatever.
Of.
Like, you just
but
get back into the
a
rhythm.
Part of it is having time, and maybe
right.
you will have time
yeah.
in this next week.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe.
So, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? Or maybe you'll sleep a lot.
I can only aspire.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's
I'm not
right.
historically very good at resting, so that's...
You don't seem like you would be.
Those
yeah.
will be my challenge.
I can rest. I've learned how to do that in my old age, and I can
so
rest. Let's get back to a little bit of personality. Is there a person or a teacher or an mm-hmm. influencer today who sort of had a big influence on who you are today and what you did, what
yeah.
you do?
I am an unabashed fan of Stephen Colbert.
Oh.
He, back in the day, was in a show called Strangers with Candy with Amy Sedaris and Paul
I don't know that one.
DeLillo.
Oh.
It is weird and hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
This character, it's a bit off color probably, but that Jerry Blank character... she's like, I don't know how to describe, she's like an adult who goes through all kinds of stuff and then goes back to high school to like get her high school diploma.
Oh.
But she's like in her 40s or 50s
oh.
or something. And Stephen
does she pretend she's young or does she admit she's in her
no,
40s?
She admits she, yeah. And
okay.
she's got all the like, the lived experience to,
uh-huh.
you know, really make everyone around
yeah.
her uncomfortable. But Stephen Colbert in the show is her science teacher named Chuck Noblet. And anyway, he's, I find myself watching a lot of the, you know, a lot of Stephen Colbert these days.
Still, so is can you find that on YouTube now?
You can find Strangers with Candy on YouTube. I've got.
Okay. I'm gonna look that
I've
up.
I've got the DVD set.
Oh, do you?
I was Jerry Blank, the main yeah. character, for like 3 years in a row for
oh.
Halloween.
Oh, that's so fun. That's a really good, that's a good little tidbit
yeah.
to know about you.
I yeah. find him also, you know, with the world and the news and the
mm-hmm.
everything that's
mm-hmm.
so difficult these days, his like really sharp wit with, you know, the edge of humor, of course, but also
right.
really sincere, like
yes.
a humanitarian perspective
yeah.
is refreshing,
yeah.
you know.
I do enjoy him now as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
And, you know, back when he did the Colbert Show,
yeah.
what was that? What was
the
called?
Colbert Report.
The Colbert Report, yeah. I loved that. And I
yeah.
had a really interesting conversation with someone I know and admire.
Mm-hmm.
And it came on one night and I said, oh, good, it's the Colbert Report. He said, oh, yeah. He said, it's so good. And I said, I know, I just love it. And he said, it's really the best news. And
yeah.
I looked at him and I said, well, you know it's satire, don't you? He said, no, it isn't. It's true.
It's funny. He
it was
found
like
this
he
pocket
really believed
of
it was
both.
True. He fell into it.
Yeah.
And it was like, wait a minute. So
yeah.
I don't know that he ever believed me. And it's sort of, I mean, our politics were very different, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I don't know that he ever did believe me. I never brought it up again.
what is truth at the end of the day?
At
you
the
know?
End of,
yeah.
Well, you know, we have had that discussion actually about how. Perception is reality.
Yeah.
Period.
Yep.
I mean, yours is yours and mine is mine, and that's the truth. So influence. What about career influence?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, I've kind of thinking about the trajectory of my career. It really
mm-hmm.
has just been kind of one stage building off of another.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody had suggested I would be in the position I am with the Vashon Food Bank right now, having
mm-hmm.
just, you know, raised over $7 million and built a new facility.
Yeah.
If somebody had told me that's where I would land like 10 years ago, I probably,
uh-huh.
you know, would have been news to me. It's like this was
wait,
not,
I'm just little Emily.
It wasn't part of, yeah, the divine plan or anything. But,
yeah.
You know, there's, so I left the food bank for a couple of years to get my master's in public administration
right.
at the Evans School.
I remember that.
And the kind of sweet spot or the whole Evans School ethos is like leadership through ambiguity and like, you know, taking it, the like, windows of opportunity that have to do with like a external catalyst and then having all the right people in the room. It really feels like my kind of professional trajectory has just been kind of one phase building on another and building on another.
Talk to me a little bit about, what did you say, influence through ambiguity?
Leadership through. Yeah. So I graduated from grad school in what, June of 2019, started at the food bank like a week later. Mm-hmm. And then 6 months later, the pandemic started. Oh, yeah. So it really was this like, you know, I at least, grad school's not cheap, right? But I feel like I got my money's worth. Mm-hmm. Because it really set me up well, I think, to, you know, just be in a leadership position during this, I mean, you guys know, during this period of just massive uncertainty.
And we knew nothing.
Yeah.
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 So to be like, what do we need to do? It's like, well, we need to get people food in as safe a way as possible. Mm-hmm. And as reliable a way as possible. Mm-hmm. And it was just like all the right people were in the room to make it happen. So.
That's really a sort of timely educational opportunity.
Yeah.
And I mean, who knew there was going to be a pandemic?
I know.
I mean, who knew? I was going to say, who knew there was going to be a panic? But there was
well,
a panic.
Yeah. We all knew once it happened.
Yeah, we did. We all panicked just a little bit. So here's a question I like to ask people. If you, and it's a common question, so forgive me, but if you were going to have dinner with somebody,
ooh,
dead or alive,
okay,
who would that be? And, you know,
hopefully yeah. someone,
what would you eat?
Hopefully someone alive.
Yeah.
Well.
No, I know. I just, the way you said that, it made me think.
You'd have a dead person at the table.
Yeah, yeah. You know, not so much. Weekend at Bernie's, you know.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good.
Now, see, I feel like this
probably
is
Stephen Colbert.
I was going to say this is not that creative because I was just talking about him, but like Stephen Colbert and or Amy Sedaris, mm-hmm. who is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's the laughter medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has just like enough. I was just talking about this at our full plates thing, but what the dinner, which both of you, I was happy to see it.
Yes. Yes.
You know, talking about how, you know, the work of the food bank is really at the end of the day, like a pretty serious endeavor, right?
Right.
I mean, I think everybody who works there knows it's unfortunate that we have to do that work at all.
Right. Right.
But we do like to bring a certain amount of levity or mm-hmm. kind of, absurdity to it because, you know, it makes it easier
well, you
to
have
get
to.
Through the day.
Yeah.
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 So yeah, I mean, Stephen Colbert and Amy Sedaris really have got
And
that.
What do you think you'd eat?
Ooh.
Like if you were cooking, what would you cook for them?
Oh, gosh, probably just like a handful of peanuts or something.
And a beer.
Yeah, yeah.
And a beer.
Yeah, just a bottle of wine.
Yeah. Order a pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan, actually, of my partner and I are kind of in the habit of making like a big slow cooker, like a big pot of stew mm-hmm. on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Usually with like an Asian influence, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
The 12-year-old I live with, Ren, his favorite soup is like an udon noodle.
Oh, yum.
It's the best soup ever, according to
him. Have you mastered it?
Actually, this is the one that my partner Brendan mostly makes, and he's got it down to a T.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so good because I try, and it never quite gets there. It's uh-huh. okay. It's
yeah.
okay, but it just
It's
never,
all about that dashi.
It's the umami.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's what it is. Yeah,
so
well,
good.
What a lucky boy he is to have that, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe you would serve that.
Yeah, actually. Mm-hmm. It is, yeah, just a big pot mm-hmm. of soup.
Let's talk about food for a minute.
Sure.
Can we do that?
Yeah.
What's your favorite pasta?
Ooh, favorite pasta.
I mean, it could be a pasta dish or it could
yeah.
be the, you know, the type of noodle.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a big fan of like a wide noodle, like Thai, you know, like a drunken noodle.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because of the drunken part, but just a real.
I love that dish though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good with like a real
or a pappardelle.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a wide noodle that really soaks up like
mm-hmm.
whatever sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like
that's
that
probably
too.
It.
Do you have a favorite, like, you know, on Tuesday night when you don't feel like cooking, do you have a favorite thing you throw together?
Ooh, that's also a really good question. I'm a big ramen fan, you know, and especially in Seattle, you can, there's like the fancy ramen and then there's just the cheap and easy ramen and they're all good in my book.
And are you talking about takeaway or are you talking about
either,
the packages? Or?
Either way. So we've always got ramen packages at our house, which are super easy and you can dress it up with some peanut butter or an egg or a, you know, just like
throw
make
some
it
extra
as,
vegetables
yeah,
in there.
Make
I think
it as
it's
fancy
wonderful.
As you want. Or there's some really choice ramen places like down in Ballard, there's Arashi Ramen. Mm. It's just like a little hole in the wall, but it's really, really,
really good.
Yeah.
It's so good for you too. You know, it's kind of a good ramen is kind of a spiritual experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really. I mean, it
with the soft egg and the, like,
the egg is the key, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what's your favorite way to eat a potato?
Ooh, that's a good, okay. You know what I've gotten into lately? When you get the like pearl sized potatoes, mm-hmm. Boil them and then you smash it with like a glass mm-hmm. and then fry it with, just like a little bit of cheese or like chili oil.
Oh.
And fry it so it gets real crispy,
on
both
the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
I like
that's
that too.
Probably my current favorite potato.
You know, potatoes. What would we do without potatoes?
I love potatoes.
I love potatoes.
Yeah.
Well, how do you like your eggs?
Ooh, usually over easy. Or dropped in like a bowl of ramen mm-hmm. or something.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm feeling fancy, I'll try to poach an egg and then inevitably fail and just have it mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a fan of like an over easy egg, pretty much on top of anything.
On top
like
of anything.
Salad,
yeah.
You know, noodles. It's like you put an egg on it and all of a sudden
I love
it's fancy.
A piece of really like Como bread, like Grand Central Como bread, crispy toast, spread with a ton of avocado.
Ooh, yeah.
And then a poached egg on top of that with tahine.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, man. That's just one of my favorite breakfasts. And it's so easy and it's fairly nutritional. But,
delicious.
You know, as listeners will note, those of you who've listened to me before, I'm an egg fanatic.
I love eggs.
And I love eggs.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Tom Conway and I were talking one day, and he has a friend who listens to the show all the time. And he said, well, so are you going to talk about eggs this time again?
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Well, probably. I eat them every day.
Why miss an opportunity to talk about eggs?
So, given all of that we've talked about, do you have a favorite meal that maybe you don't have, you know, like weekly or
all the time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do not eat, this is weird that I'm saying this, because I don't eat a lot of beef or red meat,
mm-hmm.
but a good beef stew
will
just send me
sure.
right over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of a special occasion because it just for whatever reason, beef doesn't.
You know, occasionally I don't eat a lot of red meat either.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not against it; it's fine.
Yeah,
but I just don't eat a lot. But occasionally, I get a craving. For a steak, I want a rare steak, seared, lots of salt. It happens.
Yeah.
And then, you know, unless you do it, it won't go away. So you have to have that,
gotta
you know.
You feed the need.
Yeah, you feed the need. That's, do you have, like if you were to think back in your past, do you have a most memorable meal?
Ooh.
Either location or food or...
That's a good one. So it makes me think of what I was talking about living in West Africa. They really pride themselves in their... like the national dish is called chebujen, which literally just means like rice and fish.
Uh-huh.
So it's like a big platter of kind of stewed like Spanish or jollof rice with a you know big hunk of some kind of white flaky fish in it, and then okra and carrots and like cabbage that kind of falls apart. It's really delicious.
My mouth's watering.
Yeah, it's like everybody's got their own take on it.
Is it spicy?
It can be.
There,
what is that stuff? I can't remember the name of it. But it's almost like a paste, almost like a basil, but really spicy. So there's pepper in there too.
Mm.
And it's just kind of like kind of plopped throughout various dishes.
Oh,
and of course you eat
good.
It with your hands. And
well, that's
you know.
Fun too.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And so let's talk one more minute about food. Do you have a favorite cuisine? Like your go-to, is it Vietnamese or it sounds like udon sort of?
There is just
Asian.
Just the kind of Asian influence. Mm-hmm. I love Indian food.
I do too.
There's a couple of really good places up in our neighborhood. But just kind of any like Asian soup.
Yeah.
You just can't really go
wrong. We can't go wrong with that. And speaking of Indian, you know, this is a sort of cheater thing, but I love Indian food. It's sort of like my go-to comfort food.
Like a dal or a sock.
Oh, vindaloo. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't get enough of it. Or butter chicken.
It's making me hungry.
I know. But I found Trader Joe's frozen Indian food is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like you're going to your favorite Indian restaurant, but it's pretty darn good from your freezer and to your microwave and get some good naan.
Quick and easy.
It's quick and easy and it's pretty flavorful.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love that. And so, let me see. So do you have like a food philosophy? I mean, is there anything that you can think of that shapes how you think about food?
Yeah. Really related to my work. And I think why I care about it is like, you know, food can be really fancy and kind of polarizing, especially if some people feel like there's a culture around it that's not attainable. But I very much, you know, I feel like food is for everyone, right? Everybody needs it. You can make it as fancy or as basic as you like, but it really is the kind of like general uniting factor as far as humanity goes. So yeah, I appreciate when food is more like welcoming and inclusive. I don't love it when food becomes like a reason to other people, you know, or if it becomes like, if it has an air of snobbiness.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's like, no, you know what? We all eat food.
We all eat food.
Like, it's just, it's common denominator.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, I think about, you go to a restaurant that has family style. You know, isn't that the best?
Yeah.
And, it really is.
And you can pass things around.
Pass the bowl and have a little bit.
I can't believe I forgot about this. So, but I've got, I've got a group of friends, my lady friends on the island. We, every few months or so, go out to Ethiopian food. Because, you know, Seattle's got some really good Ethiopian places, too.
Do you go to the ID?
We've done a couple places in the ID or in the Central District. There's a couple really good places down in like Columbia City. Down in like Rainier Valley. So the, you know, the collective, like you get the big platter, the veggie platter with the chicken and the, you know, just a variety
and injera.
Of things. Yeah.
Oh,
I love it. Yeah. So Ethiopian
food. But you know, that's a ceremonial kind of food, even on a regular day.
Yep.
I mean, it just feels like celebrating.
It feels special.
It does feel special.
Yeah.
I don't know for the people who grew up with it and eat it on a regular basis if it feels that way, but I can't imagine that it doesn't.
Yeah.
Because it's a very special way to eat.
It's also beautiful too.
Yes.
I mean, it's like a,
it's always,
you know,
beautiful.
The colors,
it's
and
always beautiful.
The smells.
Yeah. Well, I am real curious, too, about the changes that have gone on at the food bank.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're a food-oriented show. And what I love about what's going on at the food bank is it's always something new. There's something new happening. There's maybe a new kind of produce or a new little program or some new people. And what's something that you wish more people on the island knew about the food bank?
That is a really good question. let's see. Well, that it just kind of occurs to me. We were just I was in a staff meeting right before I came over here.
Okay.
And my coworker Duncan was talking about how
Hello, Duncan.
Yeah, Duncan Goulding, operations manager extraordinaire, among other things. We also just happen to have no fewer than three professional DJs either on our staff or board.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, which is strange. I don't know how that happened. But that we are getting a big influx of purchased local produce. So not just donation, but there's various different funding streams that really are helping us focus on locally purchased stuff.
So it helps everybody, really.
Yeah, it's good for the, you know, the local economy, kind of circular economy type of thing.
Is that partially because of the season?
Yeah, local produce purchasing is very seasonal. Yeah, because you know, I was actually just talking with Bernie O'Malley about
The
other day.
Yeah.
You know, he had East West Produce for years.
Sure.
Maybe it still is.
No,
I can't remember. No.
No.
But we were talking about, you know, how purchasing locally is wonderful. And then, you know, we also want like bananas and oranges and stuff that you just, you know, the fact is you just can't get it locally.
Right.
So I think we've got a pretty good combination of like hyper local, you know, tomatoes and kale and squash and all that lovely stuff.
And always then, potatoes and sweet potatoes.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Carrots.
Yeah. And carrots. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for listeners who may not really realize the scope of the whole issue.
Yeah.
how many people are you feeding? Yeah. What's the demographic and who's using the food bank?
Yeah. Well, we are seeing more demand for our services than ever before these days.
I knew that happened during COVID, but I didn't know if it was continuing to rise.
It never went back down.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're serving over 300 households per week, which again is a historic high.
Is that a combination of people shopping and delivery?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm going to get this number wrong, but I think we do around 150 or 160 in-person shopping services every week. And then the rest are home deliveries.
And so for those who don't know, when can I shop at the food bank?
So right now, we took our, the service model that we had at the old place and brought it with us. Mm-hmm. I think we're prepared to expand if demand really increases. Mm-hmm. Right now, you can shop in person on Wednesdays from 10 to 2, and again from 4 to 7 in the evening.
Okay.
And then we do entirely home deliveries on Thursdays and Fridays. So we've talked about all different kinds of ways that we could, expand for more in-person shopping, especially now that we've got a facility that really reflects the dignity we think our customers and our community deserve.
Well, speaking of community, Vashon is often perceived as an affluent community.
Yeah.
And, it's all those Vashon people in their rich houses and all of that. But I know that there's another side to that. How do you respond to that perception when it comes to hunger?
Yeah. I think it's really, obvious for anyone who works or volunteers at the food bank that they're like, while Vashon does have a relatively high median household income, mm-hmm. there is a really pronounced working class, and people don't have the same ability to be kind of mobile or move from one community to another lower income folks are kind of more fixed on the island.
Mm-hmm.
Vashon, this is not news to anybody, but Vashon has, of course, a really prominent artist class, musicians. And it turns out lots of that, it's like being an artist or a musician is not always super lucrative.
Not always.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly.
Hardly ever.
So, I think that the food bank serves a lot of folks who make up what you can see is the cultural thread, mm-hmm. like cultural core mm-hmm. of the community. And as a lot of folks are kind of threatened with having to leave the island or, it really, we're talking about the kind of cultural core of the island. And so we act as like an institution that kind of stabilizes it.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question actually. You mentioned that during the pandemic, your population went up quite a bit. And then you said that it did not decrease after that. What I'm wondering is, I understand why the pandemic would make that greater.
Yeah.
Do you think that part of that is that people got the idea of how to use the food bank?
I think so, yeah. We have very low barriers to service. Mm-hmm. And I think the pandemic, I guess the silver lining is a lot of people didn't realize that they're eligible. And I'm, air quoting over here, because we don't have any income requirements. We don't ask people to prove that they need food
mm-hmm.
because everybody needs food. So I think maybe the pandemic reduced some of those barriers for people because more and more and more folks were using the food bank. And then, of course, as the economy has not improved.
No.
People are not, lining their pockets these days.
Are there, the food insecurity thing is really, it's a big issue right now,
mm-hmm.
nationwide, for sure. But are there unique attributes to food insecurity with regard to Vashon Island?
I think there's a lot of food on Vashon Island, and luckily the combination of the Vashon Food Bank with partnerships like Viga's Food Access
mm-hmm.
partnership
mm-hmm.
And the what is a pretty strong network of social service providers through the Vashon Social Service Network. I think that Vashon does a pretty good job
mm-hmm.
of making sure people are fed.
Yeah.
And I actually know this is like Vashon is unique in so many different ways,
mm-hmm.
but when it comes to the broader economic impacts that we see across the country, Vashon is just not unique,
Yeah.
Yeah. Where people, you know, are struggling to make the choice between paying utility bills.
Right, or going, like, to the doctor.
Buying
or
birthday
eating.
Presents yeah. for your kids, I you know. Yeah. So, you know, those are unfortunate decisions for people to have to make.
I have to tell you one thing about food. I was one of the initial instigators, I guess you would say, of the Social Services Network.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
Yeah. And one of the things that it took a long, long time for us to figure out something that we could do together.
Yeah.
And you know what the key was? Food.
Yep.
Food was food.
It's the uniting factor.
It really is.
That was the one that finally worked.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I find that really interesting.
We were talking about that in a previous show where we had a Muslim woman and a Jewish woman on the same show talking about the differences and the similarities in their cultures and food. And we, you know, the conclusion that we reached, which is, you know, not news to people like you and me, but really, if you would just sit down at the table and eat together, we would be peace. We would be a peaceful world.
Yeah.
It's just it's that simple. It is, it is communication. It's love. Yeah. It's nourishment. It's understanding.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
I was just thinking it's not just, you know, empty calories. It has
to
do
with
culture and art and, you know.
So, So Vashon Island, being an island, has some challenges, I would imagine, with regard to supplies and ferries.
Yeah.
And is there anything that you can tell us about how that works?
So, notably, lots of other food banks in the Seattle area get deliveries from a place like Food Lifeline. Or we also previously were in the partner network of Northwest Harvest. At the end of 2024, though, we got cut out of that network.
And why?
I think there's kind of a variety of reasons floating around, but ultimately they made the choice that Vashon was like too high median income. And they really, and to their credit, really wanted to focus their services on kind of densely populated and BIPOC-led serving organizations. So the kind of demographic didn't fit there.
Which
is too bad, because we historically got about 10% of our donated food from
that's a lot.
So we're having to make up for that in purchasing. So our food purchasing budget is higher than it's ever been before.
And is that about geographic isolation, kind of?
I think kind of, but across the emergency food industry, really, as it were, people like food banks across the board are just doing more purchasing because the commitment to providing reliable access to, you know, sufficient staples is like, it's just really unreliable in the free food kind of, you know, sourcing free food. So
is there like a network, a national network of food banks? Do you work together with other for ideas and policy? And
nationally, there is an organization called Feeding America that is kind of the umbrella organization of organizations like Food Lifeline. Rotary Second Harvest is related to Feeding America as well, I believe. But the Vashon Food Bank in particular, we're a member of the South King County Food Coalition. So it's a, you know, a variety of either food banks or meal programs throughout South Seattle. We meet monthly, and, you know, not only does the South King County Food Coalition, they're the primary contractor for EFAP dollars, which are state dollars that go directly towards food purchasing.
I don't know what EFAP is.
It's the Emergency Food Assistance Program.
Oh, thank you.
Not to be confused with the federal TFAP program, which is also the Emergency Food Assistance Program.
Oh, okay.
Through TFAP, we just get food, like government commodity foods. And the volume and access to that has really dipped in the last couple of years because of what are really caustic federal policies.
Right. I was going to ask you about that. How is that affecting, how is the current government situation affecting Vashon's food bank?
Yeah, you know, aside from, well, at the end of the day, it not, not really dramatically, because our board and leadership have committed to increasing our food purchasing budget.
Okay.
So we are able to bridge the kind of dips we see. And that said, you know, from Food Lifeline, TFAP food comes through Food Lifeline, and we've seen decreases in that TFAP food. So you're thinking things like bags of rice or lentils or, you know, just kind of like traditional Yeah, yeah, like peanut butter. We get a ton of peanut butter.
Yeah.
That stuff is becoming, like, the volume is less and the reliable consistency is less. So, again, we're purchasing, like, in 2019, I believe, our food purchasing budget was around $38,000. And this year it'll be closer to $175,000
or $180,000.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that kind of addresses another question I had with regard to the gaps in the food bank. And are there gaps that you currently wish you could fill?
You mean as far as like a demographic of people we feel like we're not serving or who
that
don't know about
and supplies?
Yeah. I mean, it would be, you know, it would be great if there was a kind of a pendulum swing back to, like, during the pandemic, we had, there was so much free food in the whole emergency food network.
Yeah.
Like, we could barely manage all the free food.
You know,
that we got.
I participated in the food bank and had home delivery during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I was scared to go out of my house. Mm-hmm. I, you know, washing everything, doing all that stuff.
Yep.
But it was like Christmas.
Yeah.
There were, the food was unbelievable.
Yeah.
That, because the restaurants couldn't sell it.
And airlines.
And groceries,
hotels,
and airlines. Yep. And I mean, grocery stores were, they had to get rid of it or it would rot, you know.
So one of our warehouse managers, Michael Whitmore, who happens to be one of those DJs I was talking about.
He's one of my favorite people.
Yeah, Michael is great. He likes to talk about a time during the pandemic when we had, like, customers got like a full block of cheese, like a big round, probably
$200. Lamb chops. Wow. Yeah.
That was a different time. So now, I mean, it definitely sourcing looks different.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we're pretty committed to offering as wide a variety and reliable variety. So people can know what to expect when they get there so that they can then take their grocery list and finish out their shopping at Thriftway or IGA, which
so
is
they can kind of use the food bank as a fill-in.
Yeah,
like,
some people, I think that the majority of folks who use the food bank use it as a supplemental source of food, but then there are those who get nearly 100% of their food from the food bank too.
Well, so, you know, if you're a single mom and you've got three kids and you're
or
working two jobs
fixed income
and fixed incomes, that kind of thing.
Social
Security.
Security's not really doing lots of people lots of favors these days.
I know. It's really funny when they talk about your cost of living increase that you're going to get in your Social Security.
I know.
You know, it's just kind of funny. I mean, it's not
funny. It's kind of insulting.
Really. It's kind of insulting. Yeah. It is. Mm-hmm. So I'm gathering from what you've said that really the profile of the people who use the food bank hasn't really changed. It's just more. It's bigger numbers.
I think it's more. And so this is kind of tricky to describe because we don't ask why people do or why they don't.
Yeah.
Definitely more people. And I think because, you know, like we were talking about with the pandemic, I think the broader economic condition right now is also maybe making it easier for people to, like, to use the food bank, whereas before, and you know, it's not lost on me that our new facility, I think it's easier for a lot of folks to show up and shop there because it's like a space they see themselves being in. Whereas our old home, I mean, you guys know, being like the voice of Bashan, there was not a lot about it that was welcoming, inclusive, dignified. You know, I think that some people probably just didn't use the food bank because you get up there and it was like,
it felt like a shack.
Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And it was cold and it was wet.
Gravel parking lot. Yeah, nothing about it ADA accessible. Like, we didn't have heating inside the building.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, you were a volunteer there years ago, too.
Yeah.
And
it was cold every day.
I've come to describe our volunteers as, like, giddy masochists, you know? Because they show up and, like, want to unload a truck in, like, freezing cold weather and have to, like, go get your boxes of turkey from a freezer that was outside.
That's outside.
Lot. Yeah.
I know.
So,
but the thing is, I think with the volunteer situation is it's about a heart.
Yeah.
It's about a heart. It's about giving. And I have I just have a really strong philosophy that in this day and age, in this country, nobody should be hungry. There is plenty of food. There's plenty
of
food.
It's a matter of distribution.
It's access and distribution. And actually, I think sometimes willingness to ask for help.
Yep.
That's a hard thing for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, I debated really a long time about whether or not I was going to do the food bank during COVID. It was a big, it was like, yeah. Oh, geez, I can't, it's not.
Yeah.
And then I did, and I found out how many other people were doing it. And then it became sort of this, did you get your lamb chop?
Isn't it kind of unfortunate that in so many other facets of our lives, to be resourceful is seen as a good thing? It's like, you're so resourceful, good for you.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to something like using a food bank, which really is just a resource that's available to anybody who needs it,
right.
But there is still, or can be kind of an unfortunate stigma with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we try to break
it. Is there anything in, you know, Vashon is a small, fairly tight knit community.
Yeah.
And do you think there's anything that we as Vashonites can teach the rest of the country or the communities about food and how to address hunger?
You know, that is a really good question. My brain kind of immediately outside of food went to, you know, just the importance now more than ever of relying on each other. Like we, so, you know, part of our new facility, the vision for it is not just to be a new food bank, but also a community resource hub where people can go to all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I've really come to think of the community itself as a resource. So, you know, we talk about like Vashon Youth and Family Services or the senior center or the food bank, but just kind of mutual support in the community is just as much of an asset for people.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute with regard to the community resources that are available now, which they've always been available, but not in a central location like we are now. So for listeners who don't know what really happened with the expansion, what are some of the additional services that are available now?
Yeah, that is a really great question. So I'm really happy to say we, Vashon Youth and Family Services Family Place Program rents two offices and where.
And what do they do?
I should have their like elevator pitch down just like I do the food bank. But their Family Place Program focuses on families, I believe, with kids like 0 to 5. They're serving a lot of Spanish-speaking households these days, so have like a...
And they have counseling services.
Yeah, they have, behavioral health
social
support.
Social services. Yeah.
They have a, like a mother's group on Monday mornings where it's really just like building community and then offering people support while they're there in real time.
Yeah.
So VYFS is there. On rotating Wednesdays throughout the month, we host VIP, who gives away free pet food.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I did not know that. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Granny's Attic gives away free clothing, of course. The library gives away free books. And then women, the King County Public Health Women, Infants, and Children program, is there, you know, providing all kinds of like prenatal to, you know, young human support.
Wow, young humans.
Yeah. We also are one of a couple different places that host the DSHS van, the department, King County's Department of Social and Human Services, who can sign you up for like food stamps
or health insurance.
Healthcare.
That's I see the van around and it's like, I'm hoping people are taking advantage of that.
Yeah. There was a pretty good line out like last Wednesday when they were there. So I think, you know, part of the whole goal for building out kind of a community resource hub was that, you know, up at the old food bank, there's really only one reason somebody would be up there aside from, using, you know, a Voice of Vashon person.
Right.
It's like, you're just there for the food bank. That's the only thing that's up there.
For those of you who don't know, we have an office up there. So we're sort of adjacent to the food bank. Voice of Vashon is adjacent to the food bank. So we was kind of the two organizations that kind of shared some space.
Sure.
It was our original studio.
Right. It was the first studio.
Yep.
We call it Sunrise Ridge.
Yep.
We do.
Yeah.
So I think one of the benefits of this, of our new facility right uptown, is that people have multiple different reasons to be on the property, which I think itself, you know, you don't, it's not like I'm just going there to use the food bank. You're like, well, I'm dropping my kid off for a little kid yoga with Family Place, and the food bank happens to be open. Like, why not?
So
just
I guess
stop
I'll go.
And get some groceries?
Also, it's the central location. It's so easy to get to, and it's not a. Yep. It's not a. I know we're a small island, but there is a thing about getting in your car and having to go all the way to the food bank, which isn't that far, but now it's really convenient. It's right here.
It's convenient both like on the main bus line, on the highway. And I've, you know, speaking of like community itself being a resource, we talk about social services like they have to be a nonprofit providing a service, but really like the post office. the grocery stores.
It's all there.
The like the other shops that you would be going to anyway. Just to, you know, have it all be in proximity to each other just makes people's, I think, lives a little easier.
It's one of the most exciting projects that's happened on Vashon in years and years in my opinion. And I think, you know, I also know a little bird told me that King County was quite impressed with how quickly and within budget and perfectly this project was done. And say again, we're kind of running out of time, but I want to cover this this project because it was a multi-million dollar project that was sort of like, oh my gosh, what's happening? So can you kind of run us through a little bit of history of how that started and where we ended up?
How it evolved. Absolutely. So we, I mean, there's been kind of so many iterations of the project that so many longtime members of the community have had everything to do with.
Right.
But for years and years, the leadership of the food bank knew that that facility was not, it's not sustainable.
Well, everybody knew.
Yeah. Like the buildings are literally falling apart. Like the one time in a windstorm over the winter, the roof blew off, rolled up like a big churro, you know? So my coworkers, Duncan and Michael, were up on the roof with pallets, like trying to staple the roof back down, which is not something that is not in the job description.
Right.
But let's see. So kind of fast forward to a point when two pastors ago of the Methodist Church, a guy named Pastor Paul, was on our board. And really the notion came up that the Methodist Church has got this prime property, well-maintained buildings, like, a really, really prime piece of real estate with the intention of using the property as an asset to the community.
Right.
So while
right.
the church is very much in the, you know, the sacred space and the food bank is very much in the secular space, we had this mutual interest in, you know, providing an accessible and welcoming and inclusive space for the community.
Services.
Yeah. Yeah. So like the food bank's got the people, the church had the property, and, you know, our forces combined.
Yeah.
So
it's
that's
a great story.
Yeah, it really has. And like you were mentioning, we saw what I think, I don't know if it was surprising necessarily, but really encouraging amount of support both from Pramila Jayapal's office ushering in $800,000 through the federal capital budget. We saw $1.2 million from Washington State Department of Commerce Building Communities Fund. And King County itself, we saw $520,000 through the Best Arts for Kids capital program. So that really helped us leverage individual contributions in the community. So.
And so what was the total number? What's the total dollar figure that you...
Well, and so, you know, it's funny. It's like depending on,
I know,
but around 7.2 million. Yeah.
Yeah. That's that's really a big deal.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So, because we're so close to running out of time,
I can't believe it.
What, for somebody who wants to do, what's the most effective thing that someone can do now who's in the community?
Yeah.
How, what kind of help do you need?
Yeah. That is a really great question. I know, I think people really enjoy giving food, you know, because it's something tangible
tangible.
You can hand.
Yeah.
And then if I'm being honest, which I try, you know, I
try to be,
try to be most of the time, really financial contributions are the most impactful because we can lean on those wholesale relationships that we have to really kind of scale based on demand.
Well, and you're able to count your income.
Yes.
If you have monthly donors or bigger donors.
Yep.
So what's something you're looking forward to professionally in the coming year? Is like, is there another, are we doing a leapfrog thing here?
That's a good question. No. I have been telling everybody and it's just really true. I think everyone at the food bank is really excited to just get back into the normal rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Your stress levels are going to be lower.
Oh my gosh. My cortisol levels, I'm sure have been like unhealthily high for the past few years. And I think everybody, whether it's, you know, Allison, our social media coordinator or our warehouse guys or Kirsten, Eastman, who's been doing our finance and business stuff. We're all more than ready for a,
well, you're a pretty well oiled machine.
Yeah.
You really are. Yeah. And you have a great staff.
Yeah.
The questions are always answered well.
Yep.
And I think I'm going to hear some music in a minute, which means we have to close down. It. I'm getting waved at frantically
thank
here.
Thank you
so.
For having me.
Well, I'm so glad you came. And there's just so much to talk about. And thank you so much, Emily.
Of course.
Our heart is with you.
Thank you.
We would love to offer support. Anybody in the community, you heard, write a check, send some money to the Vashon Mori Food Bank. Thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you, Linda.
Bye-bye, everybody. And I'll see you next week.